It's when a horse gets a cut, they spray it. It's sort of. And I got to get you some bones because then you don't chew as much. He's got a little wild in him yet.
Yeah. How about those samurai swords? Where'd you get those?
Oh, those were presented to me by the Japanese when I was on my second tour of Japan.
What was that?
Oh, gee. When was it? My dates, I'm beginning to forget. 94, I think that was. And the other, we were... My son and I were there in 92, I believe it was. Then I went back alone in 94.
But who presented it?
Who presented it?
Yeah.
That was the head of the a National Socialist, the Japanese group in Tokyo. They have a Nazi group over there. I mean, they don't claim to be Aryans or anything, but they are Japanese nationalists.
Yeah.
And they took me around a lot and took me on tours and stuff, but then I also...
What'd you guys do? Pardon me? What'd you guys do?
Well, the fun part was that, well, they put me up in the most expensive hotel in Tokyo. I don't think they paid for that. The man that took me there, I didn't ask him about money, but he also had connections into the business community and the military and the police and all those people. So they took me on a tour all the way down through Nagasaki, where the bombs were dropped, and then way on out into the islands where they had these 2,000-year-old Shinto temples.
Mm-hmm.
Then they took me into the Shinto temple in Tokyo and performed the ceremony on me to allow me to be in their temple, which was quite an honor, really. And then I lectured about 400 people, businessmen, military men, politicians, and so forth, through an interpreter at one of the big meeting places there in Tokyo. And then I had a semi-state dinner with the several dignitaries. Some were in the government. One was the president of the United Nations University in Tokyo, the Tokyo Chief of Police, the nephew of the emperor, and there were about 15 people at that dinner. And let's see, what else? I met with the Japanese version of their chief of the CIA, had breakfast with him a couple of times. He was just, well, we just sort of talked a little bit, had an interpreter. Nothing heavy went down there as far as...
You went some places this year, too? You were in England? Or?
Yes, and I've also been banned now from England.
Been banned from England?
If they could catch me, they'd put me in jail.
For?
Whatever. They got... Yeah, they got some strange laws in these countries. I'm banned from Canada, even. I went up.
Yeah, no, I read about that.
I gave one speech, and they were too stupid to catch me going across the border, and I wasn't hiding. I just sitting in a car, and, you know, the Border Patrol guy looks in, and what are you guys doing? Well, they were Canadians that took me up. They'd been down to Cleveland shop, Buffalo shopping, I guess it was, and they looked at me, hi, and went right on in. They had an all-points lookout. I guess they were supposed to stop me from coming in. But once I was in, then they got this crazy law up there that you can be indicted or rejected from Canada based upon what they think you might do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weirdest law I ever heard of. So, you know, how do you know what somebody might do? Anybody could do anything, you know. Anyhow, at least they waited till I gave the speech to about 500 people, and then they arrested me.
After the speech?
Yeah, John and I. They came at us with...
Is he banned too?
Yeah. Yeah, we can't. Gee, I can't even go fishing. But I played some funny ones on them. I went across the border up there and at the Peace Park in Victoria and threw my papers all around. At one time, I had a telephone deal set up to where it sounded
Toronto,
like.
Toronto, right?
Huh?
It was in Toronto?
That was in Victoria.
Yeah.
You know, I set it up so that it sounded, to anybody tracing the call, I was calling from Victoria.
Uh-huh.
But I was actually here. And I set up a phony deal. I was going to make a speech at this hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to, I knew the weather reports. The press were calling me, and I said, well, I'm in a safe house. I can't meet with you. And it's a beautiful day, and I see the mountain over there, da-da-da-da-da. So I had them convinced I was there.
Yeah.
And then the opposition got crazy, and they were going to attack the hotel that I was supposed to be going to the meeting. And they did. There was hundreds of them. They attacked the hotel, broke the windows.
What hotel was this?
I don't remember what hotel it was. It was some big hotel there in Vancouver. And they actually injured one of the waiters or something. And then they caught a couple of them in the hotel with a bomb and later. And so, and I never even was there. And then I sent my...
When was this?
Hmm?
When was that?
See, it's been about 10 years ago now. I'd have to look it up, give you the exact date. You can check it on the internet. It's all on the internet.
Yeah.
Then I sent one of my men up there, Dennis Mahon, and he was to draw them away from me while I was supposedly going to Vancouver, and they caught him up there and they deported him too. So anyhow, I've had fun playing with the Canadians. And I'm banned in Germany.
Yeah.
I'm on the Interpol list. It's amazing. My son, they stopped him and shipped him back. Armed guards. They let him off the plane, but then they strip searched him. And two armed guards took him back to Chicago and dumped him off.
Yeah. Which son is that? Is that John?
John. I have one, just one son.
How many daughters do you have?
Five daughters. You want a glass of water or something?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
If you want one.
I may get me a cup of coffee in a minute.
So,
anyhow, we've had lots of fun, but the Japanese treated me better than anybody.
Yeah.
They actually listened to what I had to say. I was warning them about trusting the United States. If you think you can trust the future of your country, the United States, you're fools. And you better get prepared, and you better get out of this non-military position and get ready, because those Chinese are moving out fast. And that same day, same week I was there, is when the Chinese shot that rocket over the Sea of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it the Koreans? Somebody shot a rocket off, scared the Japanese. Anyhow, everything I...
What do you think about Japanese culture, just based on what I have about...
It's like the United States was in the 50s.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It's clean streets, polite people, almost no race mixing whatsoever.
That's what I mean. That's really...
It's a homogenous...
Real...
They don't even like the Koreans.
They
keep the Koreans... the few that are there down in one section of the country.
Yeah.
John was telling me a story. He was raised in a home in Brentwood up there in L.A., which was pretty exclusive. Well, just before his father and mother moved to Fallbrook, there was a Japanese guy moved onto the block, and there was a Korean moved onto the block. And the Japanese guy by the Korean's place yelling, "You Korean dog, you a Korean dog." And then about a week later, the Korean went by the Japanese house and was blasting away with a gun. So his folks said, "I think it's time to move out of here." Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
But that's how they feel, the Japanese feel about the Koreans. However, very interesting. I've done karaoke. Everywhere I go, I do karaoke. And so there was a karaoke place not too far from the hotel, a very small place, and there were Japanese businessmen all come in there and drink. And Japanese drink a lot. Mm-hmm. They really do. They smoke. They got less cancer than anybody. They're all smoking. Well, anyhow, then some Koreans came in. I thought, oh, boy, you know. And so then the Japanese guy and I were up there singing songs and duets and everything. And pretty soon the Koreans started singing, and pretty soon they were buddies. So the karaoke brought them together.
Yeah. I wanted then to talk about, I mean, you were getting into it a little bit last night. I still, you know, don't quite understand your racial views as far as...
Simple. I'm a racial separatist. I believe in complete racial separation as the best thing for all the races. So from there on, my views are quite mixed, on different subjects. I'm way to the left on a lot of things, and I'm to the right on other things.
Yeah. I mean, you used to, when you came here, you lived in an Hispanic area for a while?
Well, it was all white when I moved in.
Yeah.
And then it was all, became all Mexican.
Yeah, well, was that here, or was that...
Yeah, right up here, two blocks away, where the house that Dee's and those guys took from me.
What happened to that place?
Well, it's still there. The guy now has remodeled it. He just remodeled it real nice, put a lot of money into it. I couldn't hardly recognize it.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't put hardly any money in it.
So, I mean, when you say separation, did it bother you having people living next to you?
Well, I'd have preferred white people. Of course, you know, a lot of white people can't get along with either, but that doesn't make them great just because they're white. But I prefer a white neighborhood, but our kids and their kids didn't play together.
Yeah.
We didn't socialize, but we said hello, and once in a while they had a problem I helped them with. One night they run their car in a ditch, and I pulled them out, and you know, they liked me because there was no crime on our street.
Uh-huh.
I had cameras all over the place. I had cameras on the roof with motors on them that I could turn around and point them up and down or any direction, and I could see what was going on for a whole block.
Yeah.
And I told the Mexicans, I said, I'm not sneaking to look at you. I'm just keeping on the ball here in case somebody's coming here to rob us. So nobody got robbed on my street, and the Mexicans liked that. They didn't even tag anybody on my street. All around us were robbed and tagged. But it was a dead-end street. And they knew that, and it was a one-lane street. Anybody was up to no good. They could get in, but they ain't getting out. I'd be in the middle of the road with a double-barrel shotgun.
Did that ever happen?
One time, yeah. Way back. This is way back in the early 80s. Some couple of Mexicans were drunk, and they challenged me. I had a shotgun. But the problem was, they said, they're so drunk, they said, "Shoot me, shoot me." What do you do with a guy who's so stupid to be looking at him in a shotgun and say, "Shoot me"? I just said, "You guys, get out of here. You're too stupid to deal with." Oh, yeah, and then there was a carload of Mexicans one time, the young ones, came up, and two of them got out of the car, and they're yelling, screaming, "Metzger this, Metzger that," and I had a big chain link gate, and I went up to the gate and saw them, and I opened the gate, and these two came up to me. They got within about 8 feet, and they started jabbering, and I just pulled out my mace and maced them both, and they were rolling around on the ground, and then the fools crawled back in the car with their girlfriends, and the mace got all over the car and them, and then they all come boiling out. And about that time, the cops showed up and drug them all away. And then one other time, there was they were having a party next door, a Mexican. But I never had any trouble with the people on the block, but sometimes they'd have parties and other Mexicans would come and, you know, they sometimes want to get something going. Well, one guy was up at the top of my driveway screaming, "Oh, Metzger, you're this, you're that, you're this, you're that." I'm sitting in my office and I'm trying to work, and then after a while I said, "I can't take any more of this." So I pulled out my .45, walked out in the backyard, went bam, 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 and unloaded a clip into the air. And God, they drug that guy for half a block, got him back in the house, and they were sitting on him in the back room. "Don't go down, don't mess with that guy, he's crazy."
What kind of gun was that?
.45, military issue. One of my favorites.
Do you have guns now?
Just for home defense. I have never been a gun nut. I agree with the left about most guys. It's in, you know, a big gun. Maybe you'll think I got a big penis or something. You know, I think it's most guys that got all these guns, they couldn't shoot anybody if they had to. They don't have the balls to shoot somebody. So I keep a shotgun and a couple pistols in my safe and stuff like that. But, and the cops, they all know I'm not one of those kind. Besides, like I've told them over and over again, if I ever want guns, hey, Camp Pendleton right here, the largest Marine base in the world, no problem getting guns.
Yeah.
If you need them, if you have to have them, emergency. And you can't get them anyplace else, you can get them. Yeah.
Do you just keep them in the safe?
In most cases, I keep one out to where I can get a hold of it, because I don't have any kids here.
Mm-hmm.
And
which one's that?
Pardon me?
Which one's that you keep out?
Oh, I don't know. I keep the double barrel shotgun out because that's the safest one. It's people should not use pistols or automatics for home defense.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, you're probably going to miss the person. If somebody's in your house trying to rob you, I mean, people think you can just point a revolver at somebody and hit them, but it's not that easy, especially in the dark. And also, if they have rifles, well, hell, you shoot through your wall and hit your neighbor next door, you know. So a double-barrel shotgun is good. It's legally sawed off. And on one side, you got double-aught buck, and that's for personnel. And on the other side, you've got a dum-dum solid lead, and that's for a car. And if somebody comes into the house and they're bent on doing you harm, you don't have to aim a double barrel shotgun, because when you fire it, you're going to have a pattern about 10 foot wide on the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to miss them.
Yeah.
And anybody that sees a 12-gauge shotgun pointed at them, it's got to be out of their mind not to run. You know. Remember that old, there's an old movie with Dragnet with Jack Webb. And the movie started out, and the detective was talking about guns. "See this? This is a sawed-off shotgun. This will blow the head off a bull at 10 yards or something like that." I never forgot that. But I am not a paranoid person. Sometimes maybe I ought to be. So I don't sit around in fear of anybody.
As far as racial separation goes, what would you advocate to achieve it?
Well, first we should have freedom of choice, which we don't have. They keep telling you got freedom of choice, but the government and all these institutions are spending billions of dollars to brainwash people into race mixing. And then they say, well, everybody's got freedom of choice. No, you don't. People are 24 hours a day being brainwashed with the television. They're brainwashed at church. They're brainwashed in schools. They're brainwashed in colleges. that integration is just the greatest thing there ever was, and if we don't integrate, we're not going to make it. And and billions are spent on that every year. So really, we don't get heard very much. We don't get the platform to speak from. I've been banned in the university campuses. I used to get on university campuses once in a while, but not anymore because the pressure groups like the Anti-Defamation League and the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the Southern Poverty Law Center, they all go to college and say, well, there'll be violence if Tom Metzger speaks here. Well, they ought to know. They cause it. I don't go down there for violence, but they always get a riot going to try to attack me, and then they use that as an excuse to keep me from speaking. Mm-hmm. So I used to lecture to colleges quite a bit. So you don't really have, and I believe in self-determination. I believe that if you're not able to discriminate, you're not a free man. Discrimination is a very good thing.
Yes.
We all discriminate on a lot of things anyhow, but the only thing that separates a slave from a free man is the right to own property and the ability to discriminate on who you want to be around. And see, now you've got the laws where you have to sell your house to a person of color if they come and want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's bullshit. That's when I started becoming racist, when they passed the Rumford Fair Housing Bill.
Yeah.
And I was living in Redondo Beach. And I said, wait a minute, the government telling me who I can sell my house to? I said, that was when I really started getting upset with the government.
So,
but the problem
what is... What did you think about the whole civil rights movement?
Well, it was pretty much a sham. The black race is not really that much better off than they were before. In fact, in some cases, they're worse off because I didn't like segregation, but under segregation, there were more black millionaires than there are today. Blacks who served their own community, all kinds of, from insurance companies to mortuaries and everything else. See, people don't understand that we were in a Cold War and the United States was trying to put on a happy face for all these third world countries. And segregation embarrassed the government. You know, they didn't care about it. Some of them did, but most of them didn't care about it, but it was affecting our ability to make money and it was affecting our image in the Cold War. And so we wanted to make the black people of Africa think that, well, we really care about black people. So they had the civil rights movement, and which was partly government initiated behind the scenes, even though there was some in the government didn't like it. But a civil rights bill would have never passed. What most people don't know was the fact that they had tacked on to the Civil Rights Bill a giant money-making reclamation act that made millionaires and multi-millionaires out of a lot of guys that control the water here in the West. And there isn't one guy in 10,000 or maybe a million that knows that, but I found out about it. And so if they hadn't had that bill in there, that it would not have passed. Mm-hmm. It might have passed in the future. I have no respect whatsoever for Martin Luther King because he was a moral rat. Behind the scenes, they won't even release his files for another, 10 or 20 years.
What, the FBI files?
Yeah, he was a moral rat.
What, because he cheated on his wife?
Pardon me?
Because he cheated on his wife?
Well, he was a real cheater all the time, and of course he was involved. He did have contact with the communists and stuff like that. But I had more respect for the militant blacks, the Panthers and what's his name?
for a term?
Well, the one that they killed, Malcolm X.
Yeah.
I had far more respect for those guys who, actually, they accomplished more than Martin Luther King ever thought accomplishing, because they threatened big business with violence. And they went into Washington, D.C., and burnt several miles of businesses out, and the businessmen are always scared, they're losing money, so then they influence the politicians. Hey, come on, we got to do something. These guys are going to burn all our stores down. So actually, the black militants and the got more accomplished than Martin Luther King did, except when Martin Luther King engineered something to where there's going to be a riot, well, that affected. Anytime there's violence, you get something happening.
Mm-hmm.
Either for good or bad. Everybody says violence doesn't work, but violence works very well. It just depends on who's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'd rather have a black power, black panther, a guy living next door to me than a Martin Luther King type. Because they're the type that they go to the church. They want their kids to go with your kids, and they go, oh, it's okay for your kids to go with their kids. But if you got a militant neo-Nazi Klansman living next door to a Black Panther, they're not going to socialize. Even though they treat me quite well when I speak before them.
Yeah. You and John was mentioning that you get along well with Farrakhan.
Yeah, I was his guest years ago at his big convention up in Los Angeles. They gave I and my security men a special section, and there were 20,000 black people in that in the forum, and not Compton, but wherever the forum's at up there. And there's 10 of us.
You mean downtown?
Huh?
Downtown.
No, this is down in Inglewood, I said, Forum.
Down in Inglewood Forum.
Yeah. So I'm, so there's 10 of us and 20,000 blacks. So at the end of the speeches, I had my security man go up front and donate $100 to the cause. And they announced it, too. And the white area resistance donates $100. And they blacks clap like hell, you know. So that... It took the press a little while to catch on, but boy, that really shook them up. And then I had dealings with Farrakhan over the years. I've never actually met the man. I've met a lot of his underlings.
Mm-hmm. But, how's
that? I think it was Dr. Aleem in Washington, D.C. He's the one that got me invited to the Los Angeles get-together. And... I've met some of the locals here over the years. I supplied them with some FBI documents that helped them out. And I was living in the apartments over here because it got run out of my house. And I got a call from the bartender at the Red Eye. He said, the owner, Ron. He said, Tom. There's 10 black guys out at your gate. Do you know that? I said, yeah, I invited them up. You invited them up? I said, yeah, it's Farrakhan's boys, you know. So I went out and gave them this file, which they were being set up. And
who were they being set up on?
The government.
Or
FBI. Yeah. I forget what it was all about now. I've got it in my file someplace. But they were setting them up. And so I said, you know... And the black guy said, well, why would you help us? I said, I don't like the government either, man. You know, I got less problem with you than I do the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so my name, you know, I just did a two-hour radio show. I guess I might have told you with blacks the other night, black separatists.
Who is that?
Her first name was Toy, T-O-I, and I... forget what her last name was. She runs a radio show out of Washington, D.C. It's a black nationalist show. They even have a black national anthem they sing before they do the show. So we had a good interview, and I'll do another with them. Obviously, there's areas where we totally disagree. I mean, she's got the blacks building the pyramids and building the great golden era of Greece. And I said, okay, right, okay. But we got to talk about our problems right now, not worry about who built the pyramids. I'll get to get a cup of coffee here. People, mm-hmm. And that's not true. It's just not true. It is not true, and there's plenty of evidence in history to show it's not true. And so I read a lot. I've got a giant library. I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look over the evidence, and the evidence is one way, I say, well, okay, that's the answer. You know. So, but I'm still very good friends with a lot of people who are into the identity.
Yeah.
And we just sort of, well, let's not talk about that. We'll talk about something else.
And do you believe the origin of the white race is?
Everybody's, but Carlton Kuhn, the anthropologist, keeps saying we all came from Africa. Well, it doesn't really matter to me if we did, but I just got a feeling there may be some other answers here that have not been really explored properly. I think that the best I can do is say that, like they were arguing with me at the black radio station, they said, well, we're all from Africa. We all came to the same deal. I said, well, I guess we got out of the tree a little bit before you did. Even they had to laugh at that.
No, this is El Cabo de Agua, and I'm right here in Tulsa.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, where were we?
We were talking about Oregon quite a bit, and you were talking about we got out of
the Well, country. I think that I don't sit around arguing endlessly about where we come from. All I know is what we are today and what we have been for, you know, at least 1,000, 2,000 years, and the great European race of white people, and what we've accomplished, and being a minority race on the face of the earth, we've done everything, and including outer space. And we need to keep moving, and we're being dragged down by the third world. I mean, they're sapping our intellectual and scientific strength, and we can't move on until we do something about this problem, separate from them, quit promoting a higher birth rate among them by giving them more goodies. And hadn't it been for World War II, we'd be colonizing other planets by now.
Yeah.
And, of course, we defeated one of the best countries at the time, and that, of course, Germany. They had the best scientific research in the world. And so that was a disaster. Both sides were guilty.
Yeah. I want to talk about, go back to when you started to believe in racism or racial separation.
When did you very gradual.
When did you first get into the Klan?
1975. I'm already involved in the identity thing, and that led me. I fought with the IRS over the Vietnam War. I refused to pay my taxes to support the war, and then that brought me in contact with anti-tax people on the right wing who were having meetings around the country, and they were tax resistors.
What do you believe about taxes now? You guess?
Well, I think most taxes are just robbery. I mean, I'm paying my taxes, what I owe, but most taxation is really theft, and it ends up enriching the upper classes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a method they figured out how to, you know, if all the money that they take from the people were put back into the roads and schools and hospitals and everything, it'd be a wonderful place, but they squander it on war, and like this Iraq war, where they spent, well, they spent $200 billion. It'll cost $1 trillion by the time we get out of that godforsaken place.
Are you going to vote?
No. But if I do vote, I'll vote for the worst one, because he'll bring it down faster, and that would be Bush. He is an unmitigated rat.
But you're not going to.
It's very hard for me to vote, because when I realize both candidates do not in any way, shape, or form represent anything I believe in, I think it's immoral for me to vote.
Did you ever?
Oh, yeah.
When was the last time?
I was very active in politics, you know, running for several offices. Yes, I believed very strongly in the so-called democratic system for a long time, but I finally walked away from it. I don't believe in it. I don't think.
Was it after your Senate race?
Well, yeah, I was getting pretty threadbare about that time with the whole idea, because I had learned how crooked the whole operation is. I learned that also in the congressional race when they took my seat away from me in the state central committee and on the county central committee, that I had democratically and properly won. And they used totally deceptive and really unconstitutional methods to deprive me of my seat.
Mm-hmm. And that was for?
That was for Congress, the 42nd congressional district.
But did you won that?
I won the Democratic nomination.
You won the Democratic nomination.
Right. I didn't win. Had always been a Republican area.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a big area, all the way from the ocean to Imperial County.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy I ran against had been in Congress, I think, 8 terms. He had all kinds of money. He was agribusiness. Everybody else was giving money.
The Democrat you're running against?
He was nobody. That was Skagan I ran against, and they only put him up because I embarrassed the party, and I beat him. And then another guy ran in there, too, that helped me win. I forgot his name. Anyhow, but the Republican...
Who ran your campaign?
I ran my campaign.
Yeah.
I had help, but I mean,
Did you have any political advisors?
Well, yeah, I had political advisors, but I didn't have much money. The problem is I had more advice than I had money.
Mm-hmm.
I think I spent $25,000 on the whole campaign while my opposition spent $250,000 every year.
But you're able to get a fair amount of media attention?
Oh, I had media attention, boy. They came from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
especially when I ran for Congress. Every country, boy, I'll tell you, they came from everywhere. My house was like Grand Central Station.
So, was it interesting then to you that...
No, what they did was they talked only about the Klan, that I was still a leader of the Klan. And that's fine. I wasn't embarrassed by that, but they wouldn't talk about any of my other issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I had issues about the farm home loan program, of how they were ripping off poor people in Imperial County, and how the rich Republican millionaires were defrauding the federal government and tax money over in Imperial Valley. And then I also advocated a system of building a much bigger trade school set up in Imperial County, where there was a lot of unemployment, and bring the welfare recipients from L.A. out there and let them work in the fields in the daytime, and then give them a certain amount of time to go to college at night. And then once they get an education, they go back into the city, and we keep doing this, which I thought was a good idea. They wouldn't even print it in the paper. And then also way back then, I was pushing for desalinization plants,
mm-hmm.
and start restricting the terrible waste of water by agribusiness, which is mostly run by banks and stuff. The small farmer's been pretty well, he's a dinosaur now. Nobody wanted to talk about that, but now they're talking about it.
Did it surprise you then that though all your media attention focused on that, you were still able to win the nomination? Did you expect
I didn't expect to win. And luckily, it was the working class people of East County and Imperial County and Riverside County that swung it my way.
Mm-hmm.
Up until about midnight, I was losing because I was in the county here. I was losing really bad along the coast because that's where the well-to-do Republican money's at. And... But as you went farther east, I started picking up votes, and they hadn't counted the Imperial County votes and the Riverside County votes. And they were all calling me before, saying, oh, yeah, you lost. Now what do you say? So about 2 or 3 in the morning, they called, oh, my God, the votes are coming in from the outer district, and you won. Oh, they went nuts about that.
So, How'd the campaign go after that? I mean, what did you do?
Well, there wasn't too much I could do because I didn't have the money coming in. I didn't have the financial support.
Mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people wanted to help me, but they were only giving, you know, $5, $10, $20, you know. And I just didn't have them. I made one television commercial, which was a comedy about my opponent, which aired a few times. So I did the best I could with what I had.
Yeah.
I used the notoriety of the Klan. Being a Klan leader almost was the only way I could get press, you know.
Well, you must have gotten a lot, I would assume.
Oh, you could go back in the files of the San Diego Union or the North County papers.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of press.
It was just everything.
Funny, it must have been, you know, like you said, all over the world. People said that
they came
that
here
Klan's
from,
we could win.
And all the guys said, Barry Peterson from CBS was here all the time, and a whole bunch of those famous guys now were in and out. And I had a family room in the old house, and boy, every other day there was crews in there with setting up equipment and interviewing me. But again, they carefully cut out all the other stuff and just, well, your plans were da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And they concentrated simply on that. So in 1980, I quit the Klan and went a different direction.
So you quit the Klan in 1980?
Yeah.
And that was...
Some people still think I'm in it. I hear them talking.
Well, why did you quit, though?
Oh, because I thought I'd build enough political base that we could move on from there. If I'd have kept my seat... And I had three alternates to see in the State Central Committee,
mm-hmm.
and I had myself and three that I had in this County Central Committee, and then I started what I call the White American Political Association. I thought I had something, a foundation to work from. But when they pulled the rug out from under me, party, those were the two that stood in the doorway with armed guards and kept me out of the State Central Committee.
They physically kept you out with armed guards.
Mm-hmm. Well, the armed guards took me off the right off the Central Committee seat here in San Diego. I came up and, you know, either you get off here or we're going to drag you off. So about then, and I messed around with the U.S. Senate deal, but I wasn't very positive anymore about any kind of peaceful solution. They actually, when I ran for U.S. Senate, the cops up in L.A. Pulled a van right up on the grass of this park where we were having the meeting and took pictures through, you know, they were only about, the sidewalk was here, from here to that door, they were taking pictures of every person that went into the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, this is bullshit. This is not a democratic situation. So then I formed the White American, White Aryan Resistance and talked about more radical things. And of course, all the time I've been fighting the government over taxes and everything else. So I have absolutely no confidence in the U.S. government anymore. Listed as one of my, if not the top enemy, that close to it.
What else is up there?
The Zionist Jews who are perverting our foreign policy, and of course they're the ones who, along with their fundamentalist Christian backers, have got us in this problem in Iraq, because we're there more to protect Israel than anything else. We could have all the cheap oil we wanted if we didn't have such an incestuous relationship with Israel. But people are finally starting to figure that out. But now we got 1,000 guys dead over there for nothing. Over 1,000. It's ridiculous. So I feel probably about the same way about this government as bin Laden does, for different reasons. I don't believe in the Muslims, non-white people coming over here from the Middle East. I believe they should have total control of their own country, and I don't think we should be going in there and telling them how to operate or anything like that. But I wouldn't have any of them living in this country if it was I had the power to ship them out.
Yeah. Do you think we're setting ourselves up for a racial war?
You can't bring all these people in from the third world with all their separate little hatreds and fights and different religions and everything and stuff them into this country and stuff them into the cities. You know, where you got the Japanese hate the Koreans, Koreans hate the Japanese, the Muslims hate the Jews hate the Muslims, and all of that shit's going to explode on us, you know?
No, I mean, you know, the Christians versus the Muslims.
Well, I don't know. The Christians are pretty pacifist anymore, and sure not like the Crusades, that's for sure. I don't expect the Christians to do anything but to support Israel. They're not going to do anything about the Muslims.
I mean, what do you think about that?
Unless there's something really bad happens. I mean, the World Trade Center, you know, that was pretty spectacular, but if they...
What do you think about that?
I said at the time, and I was quoted in the New York Times, that chickens have come home to roost. They attacked the symbol of world finance and the New World Order center of financial power. That was the World Trade Center. And then they went to and attacked the Pentagon, which is the symbol of the world power of the military that backs up the corporations. Mm-hmm. They gave us the message. I understood the message immediately, but most people still don't understand the message. They hit those buildings for a reason. It was extremely symbolic. It had nothing to do with going to war with the average American person. It had to do with saying that we're opposed to it. And I believe that if Bush had not been elected president, I don't believe that would have happened.
Why is that?
Well, because the Arabs, the Muslims, just felt at that point they had no chance at all because the Republicans and Bush were so, and the Christian fundamentalists were all so pro-Israel that they didn't have a chance. I think under, what the hell's his name?
Clinton?
No, the other guy ran against
Gore.
Gore, yeah. I think if Gore had been elected, we wouldn't be in this war. And I don't believe that the World Trade Center would have come down because I believe the Arabs...
What about the other attacks before?
Well, they went after the World Trade Center before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why did they pick the World Trade Center? Well, because that who is who's screwing with the Arabs. And that's who is using Israel as a cat's paw and all that. So it was a natural thing to attack. I'm amazed that they were that smart. People say, well, are you for it? I said, well, I'm not a for or against it. I'm just saying I knew it happened. I knew it would happen. I know a lot of other things are going to happen, too. But
like what?
Well, as time goes on, there's going to be various camps at war with the government, whether among the blacks, among the whites, among the Hispanics. You cannot promise everybody everything. You can't promise equality. You can't promise, oh, you're all going to be treated equally, because that's not the way things go, you know. So people are going to, whether it's religion or what, they're going to get pissed off and go after the government. And I'm surprised that they haven't done more. I mean, it's so easy in this country. They don't need atomic bombs. They can use Ebola or any other type of warfare, germ warfare. That would be a lot more serious than even a dirty bomb.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Timothy McVeigh?
I respect Timothy McVeigh. I believe, I understand why he did it, and it was payback, and it was here again against the symbol of the Washington tyranny, as I would call it. He went against a federal building, and that's symbolic.